Bom dia, boa tarde! Welcome to another episode of the PortugueseSoccer.com podcast. I'm your guest host, John Neves, back here again to talk about my favorite subject, your favorite subject, and that is, of course, Portuguese soccer, Portuguese football, whatever word you use in your part of the world. Episode 148. Wow! What a great week for Portugal, beating up on Switzerland 6-1. So much news. Gonçalo Ramos, the new star of the world. Obviously, a lot of news with Cristiano Ronaldo. Fernando Santos, finally, he's brave enough to make some changes. And I think it's safe to say, if you count the friendly win over Nigeria and then, of course, the four matches that have been played in the World Cup, Portugal is looking a lot like what I think we have wanted these last 6 or 7 years, and that is scoring goals, winning matches, and playing exciting football, and most importantly, still being alive in the tournament. And I think we've sort of seen that, especially with the 6-1 defeat of Switzerland. And what I'm going to do in this episode, first off, if you're new, the first part of the episode, I usually talk about the domestic scene. I talk about the rumors of the transfer market, and it's already starting to happen. Talk about, did you know that there's a 55-year-old Japanese player coming to play in Portugal? I'll tell you a little bit about that. And then in the second half of this episode, I'm going to go really deep previewing the Portugal-Morocco match. I want to talk about my feelings about Cristiano being benched. Want to talk about, of course, Gonçalo Ramos. Why are Nuno Mendes and Danilo going back to PSG? So I'm going to save all that World Cup and everything surrounding the World Cup talk for the second half of this episode. First half will be the domestic scene, as tends to be the case. If you're brand new, welcome. This is my podcast talking about the league. I'm going to also talk, by the way, my probable lineup for Portugal, Morocco. But we're going to start off first with the first part, and that is domestic scene. And before I do, let me just quickly apologize. I did not get an opportunity to drop an episode before the most recent match against Switzerland, a preview episode. Some things came up, very good things, by the way, some projects that I'm involved with regards to sports. And I just wasn't able to find the time because, after all, this is not something that you do very fast. It takes a little bit of planning and preparation, so I wasn't able to do it. But I'm glad I'm back to recording it when I usually do. This episode will be dropped probably late Thursday night, Friday morning. And I'm glad to be back because big game this weekend. But since I'm going to be talking about the domestic scene, we got a lot of Taça da Liga football. A lot of League Cup football has been going on in Portugal. Again, if you know, I like it. I like the fact that we have some other type of football that's going on besides the World Cup, especially because the League Cup, a lot of people complain, makes the schedule even more congested, more busy. So playing these matches, instead of having these players sit around for 5 weeks playing friendlies, is just, for me, such a better idea. And just to give a quick update on the league, you know, obviously there's 8 groups. The winners of the 8 groups will advance to the quarterfinals coming up in January. And when we go through Group A through H, Group A, Porto, they just defeated Chaves, the Sportivo do Chaves, 2-0 on a brace by Danny Loader. Porto leading Group A with 4 points. Mafra and Vizela have 2. Chaves have 1. Porto will wrap up the final match day next week, playing Vizela at home, and all they really need is basically, as I understand it, a draw, and they will go through. Remember, Porto has never won this competition. Braga has won it. Sporting has won it multiple times. Benfica's won it like 6 times. But this is the only trophy that is not in the Porto Museum, and Sergio Conceição has made it absolutely clear that he wants them to try to win this trophy this year. And especially with the fact that Tereme is back, they obviously have a better shot to do that. Group B, total control, Sporting, 6 points. Rio Ave, who they just beat the other day, has 3 points, followed by Feirense and Marítimo in last place. Marítimo, I'll talk about in a few minutes. They have, looks like they're going to have a new manager, but they are an absolute mess. But Sporting right now will play the final match day next week at home against Marítimo. And as a result, Sporting looking really good to qualify out of Group B. Group C is very interesting. You got Moreirense with 6 points, Benfica with 6 points, Penafiel and Estrela Amadora each have zero, so they've been eliminated. And of course, as luck would have it, Moreirense will be hosting Benfica in the final match day. Benfica needs to win that match, or at least, you know, score a lot of goals. But that that Group C right there is not 100% certain for Benfica. Benfica, of course, you know the story already. Have not lost this year. Won their first two matches, but they just went on a 9-10-day vacation. They've come back into Seychelles. And the question is did they lose any momentum? And that's the big question that a lot of people are asking. Because remember, they played their two group matches, and then they went on vacation. And now they're back to play the final group match and then obviously get ready for the Liga B1 season, which starts a few days after Christmas, coming up later this month. I think it's starting around the 28th and 29th of December. Group D is pretty much already all decided. Braga wins the group with 6 points. Passos de Ferreira, 2. Casapia, 1. And Trofense, 1. So pretty much Braga's already won that group. They're just going to finish up the final match day next week. Group E, still a little bit wide open. Gil Vicente from Barcelos with 4 points. Nacional, 3. Portimonense, 3. Covia, 1. So that's pretty much wide open still with the final match day coming up. Group F, Boavista, they are through. 6 points. Guimarães, only 2. Villafranquense and Bissad are also down at the bottom. So Boavista has already qualified out of that group. Group G, and these are the last two groups that have 5 clubs each. Leixões is leading the way from the second division club. They are leading the way with 7 points, followed by Feirense from the Feira with 2. Oliveirense with 2, Arouca with 2, and Santa Clara with 1. But Leixões looking pretty good so far. And then Group H, another group with 5 teams. Turiense, the team that I've been following all season, they have 6 points, followed by Académico de Viseu with 5, Tunela 2, Estoril 2, and Familia Cone 1. And when you look at the remaining schedule with regards to, you know, what happens with everything, let me just scroll down here while I get it to you. Basically, next week, on the 13th, next Tuesday, Sporting, Marítimo, Rio Ave, Feirense. Sporting, again, only needs a draw to go through, and that'll happen on Tuesday. And then the Porto match will be on that Friday, the 16th, so next Friday. Porto only needing a draw. They are playing Vizela at home along with Chaves and Mafra. Porto in control, so that'll be that Friday, December the 16th. And then Benfica, with their group, they only pretty much get going the following Saturday, so not necessarily this Saturday when you listen to this and this comes out. It's the following Saturday where they'll be playing that big match on the 17th, that Saturday. And they'll be going up north to Moreiros do Conego. They'll be playing Moreirense, and when it comes to interest. But other matches, Sunday again, Group D, Braga playing out the string. They've already won that group. And, you know, when we look at the other group matches, pretty much there's a few matches. Again, what makes this confusing is the fact that the groups with the 5 teams, they still have to play an extra match. But again, in terms of the big three, I think those are pretty much close to being decided, although I think Moreirense has a little bit of work. And in case you're wondering, okay, who plays who if you qualify? So basically, Porto's group, which, like I said, I think Porto's in great shape to win. They're going to play the winner out of Group E, which right now is being led by Gil Vicente. But again, Nacional and Portimonense are pretty much still in the thick of things. And in the final group match, and I'm kind of strolling to that right now, the final group match in that group, let's see, where are you, Casapia? Here we go. So the final group match is Portimonense, Gil Vicente, Covia, Nacional. And again, that group is wide open when we get to that. But basically, Porto will play the winner out of that group. And Gil Vicente right now is looking pretty good in Group E, especially if they win their next match. Group H, the Group H winner. And that's the winner again, where we still have 5 teams in the group. Torriens is kind of leading the way, but still a few more matches to play. That Group H is already set to play Boavista, which has already qualified. The next group is the winner of Group B, which is Sporting's group. And like I said, it looks like Sporting's in control with that. They will already, pretty much once they finish playing the last match day, we know they're going to be playing Braga in the quarterfinals. So that's a great quarterfinal match, and I could assure you neither Sporting or Braga wanted to be in that position of having to play each other, but that's the way the draw came out. And then Group C, which is Benfica's group, they're going to be playing the winner of Group G, which, again, a lot of work to be done. Leixões is pretty much leading that group. They win their final match, and they will be going through to play Benfica. So, again, one would argue that Benfica probably has the easier group if they manage to win their last match day. And when I look at, you know, the last group, you know, basically, like I said, there's still a few matches, you know, left to be played. But when it comes to Leixões, they still have to go to the Santa Maria da Feira to play Feirense, Santa Clara, or Roca. They still have to play, but Leixões is really, really looking in great position to qualify out of that group. So that's pretty much it, the League Cup. It's not attracting a lot of attention, probably because a lot of people are pretty much full of football, soccer. And then all of a sudden in the evening, here you have, you know, another football match, which, again, has not generated a lot of excitement, although I do believe very strongly that the decision to play this tournament was a very smart one, you know, at this time of the year. But that's pretty much your League Cup report. Moving along with other news domestically, Marítimo, as I'm recording this, looks like they're going to be replacing their manager, João Henriques, who's only been with the club for 3 months. Obviously, they started off, Marítimo had another manager, Vasco Seabra. It did not work out well. João Henriques, who's done some pretty good work in the past with Moreirense, he came in. He was also, by the way, at Santa Clara, if I recall, and it hasn't worked with him, so apparently they're negotiating because Marítimo lost both of their matches in the League Cup, so they're out of that competition too, as well as the Taça de Portugal. And then, of course, the rumor is that Daniel Ramos, who's already been a manager once at Marítimo, and obviously he's bounced all around Portugal, and he is rumored to be the next manager as of this recording. And again, that this needs to be confirmed, but that's one of the rumors, and obviously he's one of the managers that's very, very available. And then, of course, when we look at managers abroad, it looks like Brazilian clubs continue to love Portuguese managers. Again, for many years, there wasn't a very big Portuguese manager influence in Brazil. Whether you agree with this or not, that was all changed when Jorge Jesus, JJ, went to go manage Flamengo and help them win the Copa Libertadores. That kind of revolutionized the thinking of Portuguese clubs. And now you've got all these Portuguese managers in Brazil. Vitor Pereira is rumored to be going to Flamengo. And again, he was just at another club in Brazil. He left for personal reasons, and that's caused a lot of controversy, but apparently he's linked with going to Flamengo. Renato Paiva, who most recently was in Mexico with Leon, it didn't work out. He was also, by the way, at one time mentioned with two clubs in MLS, if I remember. He was mentioned, I think, linked with Los Angeles FC. And I also recall he was mentioned that one time connected with Atlanta United. But he's basically in Brazil now with Bahia. We obviously know about Abel, who's been doing a great job at Palmeiras. Luis Castro continues at Botafogo. And the newest addition in Portugal, to bring it up to five, is Pedro Caixinha. He's going to be apparently working, being the manager for Red Bull Bragantino. Pedro Caixinha is one of those managers. He's been in Costa Rica. I think he's been in Mexico. I think he was in most recently in Argentina. And now he's going to Brazil. He was in Scotland with the Glasgow Rangers at one point. I think he might have been even in Poland or Bulgaria. He's one of those Portuguese managers that really doesn't, for whatever reason, just doesn't want to manage in Portugal. He just seems to take these opportunities abroad, and he's moving from, you know, all these different countries, Pedro Caixinha. But I just found that interesting. But now he's going to Brazil, and he's going to be managing Red Bull Bragantino. And again, I don't know how, like, I get it when you're a manager, but if you have a family to move from country to country, I suppose from a standpoint of experiencing cultures, it's awesome. But at the same time, it's got to be tough on you, man, to move from you know, country to country, and the taxes that are involved and the laws. And what about, you know, I don't know if I believe he's married. I'm not sure if he has kids. I don't know him that deep. But, you know, what about the kids? So it's a fascinating situation with Pedro Caixinha. He's probably single. Again, I don't know. But my point is he moves around a lot. He moves around a lot of different countries. And that's not easy for being a manager or even for players when they move from country to country. You always got to remember, if you have kids, imagine moving to another city or to another country. And, you know, that's not easy to do. And imagine having to do that multiple times. But that is the life of a footballing manager as well as the footballers. Hey, we haven't seen a whole lot of news about, you know, the transfer market, but obviously we're going to start to see that real soon. But one of the news items has been João Felix, who's having a very good World Cup. A lot of people felt the last match after Gonçalo Ramos that João Felix was the best player on the pitch against Switzerland. But I think you know by now João Felix and Atletico are headed for a divorce. Atletico is looking for at least 100 million. Remember, they spent like 127 million buying him from Benfica, which I remember at the time. I think João Felix is a great player, but that's a lot of money. They're looking for around 100 million. Bayern has been mentioned. United has been mentioned. The newest name has been Arsenal. Are they going to spend that much on João Felix? I don't know. If he continues his World Cup form, that'll certainly help out his cause. But João Felix, apparently Jorge Mendes is working on trying to find his next club. And that'll be very curious to see where he lands. And I think at the end of the day, PSG, by the way, has also been mentioned with him, although that doesn't make a lot of sense to me because there's so much talent already there. If you're not playing in Atletico or playing very well, I don't know how you're going to do so much better at PSG. But again, we've talked about this with like Jota at Celtic and when Jorge Jesus went to manage Flamengo. And, you know, sometimes you go to a new country and you go to a new club and you just do better. It just clicks. It just works. Maybe that'll happen with João Felix. Maybe he'll go to this new club and maybe it'll click for him and it'll start to work. We'll see what happens. But the price tag is basically about 100 million. I'm going to talk about this here because it's not necessarily directly related to the World Cup. And that is, of course, Cristiano Ronaldo. He was asked after the Switzerland match, and he gave a brief answer, you know, about Al Nassr of Saudi Arabia. There were reports that the court was one of them that basically came out and said that, you know, he was going to be headed there, $200 million. There was another one that reported $300 million. I think there was even one that went as far as $500 million. But Cristiano said no truth to that. Fabrizio Romano has basically come out and basically said that, you know, they're still hoping for an opportunity. The people in Cristiano's camp are still hoping for an opportunity that he will still stay in Europe and play top level football. And again, with what's been going on with Cristiano, you know, he didn't obviously, as you know, start. And I'll talk about that a little bit more here in the second episode. But has his market value outside of, let's say, China, outside of Asia, outside of the Middle East, outside of MLS, I think his market value has dropped in terms of interest. And I just think that at this point, if someone was going to get him, they would have grabbed him by now because he's a free agent. But a very, it's just very tough for Cristiano. I think, you know, ever since he scored the goal that made him the all-time scorer, I just think something has dropped. He's not performing at the same level, although we know he's a little bit older. I personally still think he's one of the best strikers in the world. But unfortunately, I think bringing him on, you know, if you don't start him, that creates a controversy, at least in the press. He wants to play at the same level that he was playing, whether it be, you know, what he was doing at Real Madrid, whether he was doing at Juventus, whether he was doing at United. He still wants to get serious minutes. He does not want to be on the bench. And obviously now that he was on the bench and Gonçalo Ramos, who is the talk of the world, that cannot help his argument. And we'll see if, in fact, he goes in. And let me also say, it's a lot of money in Saudi Arabia waiting for him. And there's a lot of people in that part of the world, a lot of, you know, a lot of football, a lot of soccer fans, and there's no doubt he'll continue to grow his brand. But if he goes there, he's taking a step down. Because, you know, if it's about the competition, and it's about playing. Forget about the money. Let's talk about the competition here. He's got his old club Sporting that, you know, unless they win the League Cup, there's not a lot to play for. I mean, it could help him with, you know, Europa, although I don't know if he would be eligible for Europa having already played. But the only place he can go and stay in Europe, it almost feels like it's just Sporting at this point. And again, we've had mixed reports whether or not Sporting would be interested. But when you have been what he has been, and you've been one of the best players in the world, this has to be a tough time, because I think he's coming back down to earth. But he's a great guy, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in the next episode, about my prediction for the probable 11, talking about Fernando Santos. He all of a sudden got brave, and I'm going to talk about that coming up now here in part two of the PortugueseSoccer.com podcast. Part two of the PortugueseSoccer.com podcast. Welcome back. Going to talk about the Seleção, the national team, the World Cup, everything. But before I do, again, I want to thank you all for your support of this podcast. The numbers, especially in the last few weeks, have been amazing, which is why I felt bad that I couldn't do a podcast previewing Switzerland. But the numbers have, I'm getting my best numbers ever, let's put it that way. And I think people appreciate objectivity. They appreciate someone speaking from their heart. And I'm going to be doing that in a few minutes when I talk about Portugal. And again, you want to support this podcast, please follow it, whether it's on iTunes, Spotify, Anchor FM, Google Podcast, Podcast Addict. It's also on YouTube, and I also had it put on Audible, and I also had it put it on Amazon Music. I was approached to put it on those platforms for some people that tend to use those platforms for their music and podcasts. So I'm really glad to be doing that and inviting those platforms on. And even if you don't listen to this every week and you want to support this podcast, give it a follow. And again, through my heart, I'm very honest. You're talking to someone here who spent a lot of time in Portugal, been doing this for over 25 years with the Portuguese League. Not everybody agrees with what I say, but I think based on the audience that I've managed to put together between the website, Instagram, Twitter, and this, I think people, you know, thank you for your appreciation and for being a member of my community and coming into my life to be a very big part of this. But let's talk about the World Cup. And look, what a great win against Switzerland. It exceeded our expectations. The match was 1,900 hours in Portugal, 1,400 hours my time, and about hour and 15 minutes before that, the lineup came out. Gonçalo Ramos replaced Cristiano Ronaldo up front. Guerrero stayed at left back. Delo was at right. Cancelo went to the bench. And a lot of people couldn't believe it, although a lot of people did admire, okay, Fernando Santos finally taking some chances. The question was it right to be taking a chance in a knockout match? And man, oh man, oh man, wow. Gonçalo Ramos scores the hat trick. He's the talk of the world. If you didn't know about him, you know about him now. Comes out, scores the hat trick. An amazing accomplishment. Portugal, with Cristiano Ronaldo on the bench, played brilliant football. Switzerland were just hammered. And it was just amazing. And if you listen to this podcast for a long time, okay, you know that I've talked a lot about the fact that when Cristiano plays, it was too much Cristiano. I talked about how Bruno never used to play well with Portugal. And there was always that thinking that maybe Portugal played better without Cristiano. But the problem, and let's look at this the last 7-8 years, let's not necessarily look at this last 6 months, is that Cristiano has bailed Portugal out so many times. There's a reason why we call him the GOAT, because this is somebody that helped Portugal qualify for the 2014 World Cup. All those beautiful goals, including that free kick against Spain in the 2018 World Cup, obviously helped us win a final, a Euro final, 2016. And a lot of people like to say, well, he wasn't even playing that match because he was hurt. But nevertheless, he helped us get there. And obviously, we won a Nations League with him. And he is, we all know where he stands. But right now, Fernando Santos said it was a strategic decision. And as a result, he was put to the bench, which shocked a lot of people. And at the end of the day, for Fernando Santos, it worked. We saw the Portugal that I think a lot of people wanted to see, scoring goals, keeping the other team constantly on the defensive. Everybody's been waiting for this. Everybody's been waiting for this. This should have happened with Fernando Santos being this brave with his starting 11. Not now. He should have started, kept this going. You know, I think sometimes after 2016, remember, we basically drew in all our group matches. We made it out as like a third place team. I think the only team we beat in regulation in the Euro was Wales in the semifinal. Everything else was, you know, PKs or extra time. And I think Fernando Santos was like, hey, if that's how we're going to win, that's how we're going to win. And he never took chances. And I'll give him credit. I never expected Gonçalo Ramos when I did my starting 11 that I put on PortugueseSoccer.com Twitter. I never expected Gonçalo. Nobody had Gonçalo. Nobody had Gonçalo. A lot of people had the other 10 or 9 teams. I had like the other 10. But nobody had Gonçalo Ramos. And when reports started to surface before the match, it started off with RTP. Obviously, RTP has the rights to the World Cup, so they obviously probably got the lineup early, and it's, you know, they're spending millions of dollars to pay for the rights. Of course, they're going to put it out and break the news. And then eventually the record came along, and they confirmed it as well. And then it happened. Cristiano was on the bench, and we saw the future of Portugal. With all the young players we have, all playing a very big part in it. And at the end of the day, it worked for Portugal. It just worked. It looked like the team that we've been asking for, okay, for the last 7-8 years. And I think you need to give credit, number one, to Fernando Santos, even though he woke up a little bit too late. One would say that if we make it to the semis, and I'll talk about Morocco in a few minutes, he probably is going to stay with the job. He's not going to really go anywhere. I think he still has a contract for a few more years. I think a lot of people wish he would leave after this. But you know what? If you're seeing the Portugal that you're seeing now, and it's working, do you want Fernando Santos not to be the manager anymore if he's finally changed his mind? But it was just an amazing match. I always talk about one of the first matches that I remember seeing was the 1986 World Cup. I remember watching Portugal play England. I remember Falu Futre coming off the bench in the second half of that match. And Portugal beat Bobby Robson in England. I remember Portugal that year was in the group in Morocco. Portugal lost to Poland. Then they had to beat Morocco. And I always tell a funny story about what was it like to grow up in the 80s as a kid to what it is now, where obviously the matches are on TV. I remember watching that Morocco match last when we played them in the 86 World Cup. That was in Mexico, by the way. And I remember that my TV guide said that my local channel, Telemundo, which back then was the only place where you watched World Cup games. It wasn't being shown on regular American TV. I think NBC was showing maybe one or two matches, I think, on weekends. But that was it. You know, you had to go to a movie theater to watch. I mean, we're talking about the 80s. But I remember I was watching England and Poland with my uncle. And the announcer, the Spanish announcer on Telemundo, it's a Spanish network, was like, Morocco goal, 1-0. And I'm looking at my uncle, and we're looking at the TV guide, and we're like, wait a minute. This game is supposed to come on at this time because it was, you know, tape delayed, but we didn't know because it didn't say tape delayed. And then all of a sudden, a few minutes later, we heard Morocco scored again. And we're like, what is going on here? Are Portugal playing? Back then, I didn't know what shortwave radio was. And that was my memory of Morocco. And I know we played Morocco, you know, in 2018. But back then, Portugal was not the team that it is today. And the Portugal of today, with the Cristiano Ronaldo on the bench, is very powerful. And this is a new Portugal that we've seen, I think, in this World Cup. We've seen players like Bruno. We've seen players like Gonçalo Ramos. We've seen the players that are the future. And I think it's very beautiful, and I think that that's what's been really great. Now, a few notes. First off, Ruben Dias did not train on Thursday. Again, I want to see what happens on Friday. And I'll put out my final probable 11 on Friday night. But Ruben Dias was still doing recovery work on Thursday, which was a bit surprised. So Fernando Santos had 23 players that he worked with at training. And when I'm dropping this episode, we haven't done, you know, Friday training yet. That was really the only news in terms of the players. We know that Nuno Mendes and Danilo are done. Their club, PSG, has asked them to come back to Paris. And as a result, they have left. A lot of people don't like that. A lot of comments on social media, especially on PortugueseSoccer.com, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, partner account, Portuguese_soccer_noticias on Instagram, a partner. A lot of people not happy, wondering why you wouldn't let those two players stay in camp and maybe be there as long as Portugal would be there. But the French have ordered them back. They're going to continue their recuperation because let's not forget, we still got club football to play after the World Cup. It's not like things are going to end. That was a bit surprising, though, that they don't get to stay in case. Because I think Danilo was only out until the groups. You know, those were the reports. And now apparently, I guess it's longer because had he been available to play in any of these three matches, I would have assumed he would stay. But PSG has called them both back. And as a result, we're down to 24 players and obviously less options in the back. But that was a bit of a surprise. Talking about last game, in addition to Cristiano, we saw Rafael Guerrero start on the left side and not Cancelo. A lot of people wanted to see Delo on the right, Cancelo on the left. But Fernando Santos sticked with Rafael Guerrero. That's his natural position. And look, he scored a goal against Switzerland, so obviously it worked. But again, look at this player, Juan Cancelo, that you have on the bench waiting to come into the game. You know, the talent is amazing. But if you're Juan Cancelo, you have to feel bad. If you're a Juan Cancelo fan, which a lot of us are, you kind of have to feel bad too. But that's that was a big surprise last week. When we look to the future, Cristiano, I think what's going to happen, in my opinion, let me bring on my sheets here. I should have brought them out sooner. Here is my predicted starting 11 for the game, subject to change, depending on what happens on training on Friday, especially keeping an eye on Ruben Dias. Costa, obviously. Thiago Dalot, obviously. Pep, Dias, no doubt. Cancelo or Guerrero, he's not going to change Guerrero. Guerrero's going to still stay there. He scored a goal in the last match. Unless Guerrero's not 100%, you know it. So Cancelo's going to be on the bench. But by the way, not a bad player to bring in that position off the bench. I think you'll see, of course, Bernardo. The question is it's either Neves or William Carvalho? I think that's the biggest question. I think he's going to stick with Carvalho. I think William, he likes William. And look, we did win with William 6-1. I like Ruben Neves because I think, in addition to playing well, I think he's also somebody that can score, especially on free kicks and these long-distance goals that he's managed to do on occasion with his club Wolves. Otávio is in it. Bruno Fernandes, of course. Gonçalo Ramos, of course. And João Félix. It's kind of funny. I put out a tweet last week, after the match, and I said, Gonçalo Ramos has to start against Morocco. And I have a lot of followers that are big Cristiano fans, and they got upset. What? You would do that to the GOAT? You're an English language Portuguese website, and you would do that to the GOAT? Well, you're going to keep Gonçalo Ramos on the bench after you just had a hat trick? You're not going to play with that momentum? Are you nuts? And that's when fans are fans, and you ask yourself, are they fans of the team and they want to win? But hey, Cristiano's a great person. Great with the kid. He is the best professional in any sport. I say that with the NFL, the NBA, the NHL. I've never seen anybody stop to take photos with kids, especially kids in wheelchairs. I have to tell you from personal experience, for anyone who knows me, I've spent my fair time in professional arenas and stadiums in the United States, and nobody stops to see the fans as much as Cristiano. But at the end of the day, this is about winning. A draw does not get us through. A win gets us through. And I think Gonçalo Ramos needs to start. But a lot of people weren't happy that I suggested that. But I am predicting Gonçalo Ramos in the 11. No doubt about it. Let me tell you, if Gonçalo Ramos is not in the 11, I will ask that the doctors of the Federation check out Fernando Santos, because that would be crazy. That would be crazy. But he is going to be in the lineup along with João Félix, who, again, trying to resurrect his career because he's got to figure out where he's going to be playing next after this World Cup. So Costa, Delo, Pep, Dias, Guerrero, Bernardo, I think it's going to be either Neves or Carvalho. Again, you'll see my final prediction on Friday night. Otávio, Bruno, Gonçalo Ramos, and, of course, Félix. And that's going to be, I think, my prediction. A comment on the story that came out in the Record, okay, that apparently Cristiano threatened to leave camp, then changed his mind, thought about it, and he stayed. And If you saw the Otavio press conference, or obviously you could have read about it on PortugueseSoccer.com Twitter, everybody, including Otavio, is fully supportive of Cristiano. The Federation came out, denied that Cristiano wanted to leave. But that was the story that came out. And I can't imagine Cristiano knowing how big this event is. I really don't believe that's true. I know some people that work at the Record, with all due respect, I just don't believe that that's true. It's one thing to sit in a hotel room behind closed doors, have an argument between two people and threaten that. I could see that. But to really think that it was going to happen, I just don't believe it. But nevertheless, it's just, you know, again, look, I'm sorry, Cristiano. You've got 500 million followers. You promote a lot of products. If you've seen some of the photos, whenever Cristiano's warming up, there's just so many photographers watching him. He's on the bench last game. Do you see all the photographers basically in front of the bench taking photos of him and all the players singing the national anthem? He's an international superstar, and he's carried Portugal for so long. It's got to be tough for the guy that he's got to basically be sitting on the bench after what he just went through with United, because he could contribute. But the dynamic is just not there. But the FBF denied it. Cristiano put out a great post on Twitter and Instagram talking about their United. Portuguese people, we're going to get through this. Believe in us. A great line. Obviously, that was written by somebody that works for him. But great nevertheless. And I think it's just a great thing for Cristiano. And, you know, it's just a tough situation for Cristiano. Let me also say something else. Leading up to the match with Switzerland, okay, Fernando Santos had his press conference, and they asked him, you know, Fernando, what did you think about Cristiano's reaction to being subbed? And Fernando Santos, I watched the video, was not very happy. Now, I posted a story up from ESPN, and for a lot of people that don't know ESPN outside North America, it's the biggest sports channel. I believe they own TSN in Canada. But it's big in America. Yeah, it's been around for 40 years. I think it's so big and it has so many channels that I think for a lot of us with cable, it cost us like out of our whole cable bill, we're paying like $9 just for ESPN, in case you didn't know. But they had a story that I used and it upset a lot of people, although the story was right. But the headline was Santos blasts Cristiano Ronaldo, and a lot of people got upset. And what's kind of dangerous about that is you could agree not to like the headline. And the headline, obviously, I think the Guardian newspaper has done a great job, I've noticed, with the Portuguese cover, in my opinion. And I think they had it more like he was annoyed. He was disappointed. But I think blast is a little bit too strong. But I did use that story. And a lot of people were like, oh, he did not say that, fake news. How dare you be an English language website and post that? I'm sorry. Fernando Santos wasn't happy. And if you watch the video, and now I'm not talking about the 1 minute video clip. I mean, you got to watch everything that led up to that interview. And it was obvious that Fernando Santos wasn't happy. And then obviously the next day we saw that Cristiano wasn't in the lineup. Is it related? I don't know. We don't know. The only people that know, just like with when you talk about, you know, rumors of transfer market, is the player, the manager, or the president, or, you know, the player, the club. Those are the only people, the agent. Those are really the only people that really know what's going on, you know, with regards to, you know, these controversies. And but apparently, everything I read, it was true. And what's dangerous is when you're criticizing anybody, and there were, you know, I saw a bunch of other websites that said the same thing, and they were getting criticized, is people don't bother to read the story and realize that Fernando Santos was annoyed, and that, in fact, was true, even if maybe the headline was too strong. By many outlets, not just ESPN. And it's a shame because a lot of people just read the comments and they don't read the story because they think it's clickbait and they don't realize that it really did happen. And then they become very sensitive that people are being anti-Cristiano Ronaldo. And I'm afraid to say that it looks like he was annoyed. And obviously we saw the next day. And again, is it connected? I don't know. But Cristiano didn't get the start, as we all know, the next day. So a lot of drama with Portugal. You know, that's just the way it's been with this World Cup. But we're in the quarterfinals. We're playing a very good Moroccan team. Let's talk about Morocco before I end this podcast. First off, they're the surprise package. They finished first in their group. They've only given up one goal. Apparently, of all the traveling teams in Qatar, depending on how you call it, they apparently have had the best fan support. The Portuguese players have even acknowledged that. They beat Spain. Remember, we played Spain last year in the Nations League. We drew with them in Spain, and then we lost to them at home to Braga. They beat Spain. You know, that's something to be a little bit worried about. They're dangerous. On paper, probably 90% of the people are going to say, well, after what I just saw against Portugal, against Switzerland, absolutely Portugal's going to advance. But they've been very good defensively. They've been one of the best defensive teams in this tournament. And if Gonçalo Ramos and the boys aren't scoring, and this is a 1-1 or 0-0 game in the 70th or 80th minute, that's going to make me very nervous. Because even though I think Portugal has a better chance in this game to score more goals than Morocco, we all know that if their defense is as good as advertised, Portugal's got to be careful that they don't give up a late goal. Or maybe Morocco forces it to extra time and penalties like they did with Spain. So it's something to be very dangerous. But this is a country that has just been very, very good defensively. They've got some attacking players up front. Sofiane Boufal, Hakim Ziyech, and Youssef El Nesri. Like I usually do, don't expect me that I got those names right. But obviously it's been their defense that I think has really stuck out with the team. And they have been very good. They've got some players in the back. The goalkeeper, Yassine, obviously made a name for himself with the big saves he made, against Spain. And they're called the Atlas Lions. And they're managed by Wally Rodrigo. And this is a team, like I said, I think their strength is defense. And Portugal's strength is our offense. So we've got two of those styles contracting here. And I worry a little bit because if we go back to being the old Portugal, meaning we don't play the way we've been playing, let's say, these last five matches, since we finished club football and started concentrating on Qatar, then I think this could be very, very dangerous. Obviously, I think Portugal is the favorite, but despite the fact how we looked, let's not forget we lost to South Korea the game before that. So to sit here, and I don't care that we rested players because of the yellows, and there's still players like, Diaz and Neves and a few other players that are still in yellow card danger. That still carries over. But they're going to be tough. They're going to be really very, very tough. Portugal has to score early to set the tone and to force Morocco, instead of being defensive, to try to score goals to keep up with Portugal. If Morocco manages to keep Portugal off the scoreboard and they go into halftime 0-0 or even, let's say, 1-1, that would be a great result for Morocco. And that means that they would have a little bit of advantage going in the second half because their defense has been so strong. But if Portugal plays like Portugal, Portugal should win this match. And a lot of people, like I said, being Portugal is very lucky because now this puts us through, to play into the semifinals, which, as we all know, would be great. And I think that's, we'll see what happens. But I think, in my opinion, Portugal is the favorite. But I think it depends. I want to see the first 30 minutes of this game to see whether or not Portugal can score or whether or not Morocco's defense is going to basically be the story. I think that's pretty much it. I think if we start heading into the second half and it's 0-0 or 1-1, I'm going to be very worried. I still think Portugal is the better team to score. But defense, man, I mean, Morocco will pack the back. They may park the bus knowing that they've got to keep a lot of the Portuguese players at bay. So, but listen, this is sports. We lose to South Korea. Everybody's a little nervous. We play Switzerland. Remember, we beat Switzerland at home in Nations League, and we lost to Switzerland away. And I even said, be careful with Switzerland. And Portugal made it look so easily thanks to Gonçalo Ramos. Rafael Leão scored. Rafael Guerreiro scored. Pep, beautiful goal. The veteran defender, he's not old. And it looked good for Portugal. So can we continue to be that way? I don't know. But I'm looking forward to the game. It's Saturday morning, my time, at 10 a.m. Again, PortugueseSoccer.com. Twitter's been hot. A lot of comments. A lot of follows. PortugueseSoccer.com. Facebook has been doing very well, up 1,000%. I was looking at the analytics. Instagram is doing very well. So many comments in the DMs. That's been very healthy. And obviously, like I said, this podcast. And I want to thank you again for your support. And let me end this podcast like I always do. If you're brand new, I always end it talking about my favorite club in Portugal. You know, my team is Arsenal, and obviously I'm very happy about Arsenal. Fabio Vieira, by the way, the other day in the club friendly, scored a nice goal for Arsenal. And that is the dream. I wanted to talk about it in case they move up the tiers. I could say that I've been following this team from the beginning, and it's documented here on my podcast. But in the districts in Portugal, the fifth division, there's a team called Atlético dos Arcos, which right now is in first place by 3 points over a second-place team called Limianos. We have made it to the playoffs twice, where we finished in first with somebody else and we lost both times, and we've been stuck in the districts. And my goal is to see them move up to the fourth division and the third. I think the best they can do is the second. They don't have the money for the first division unless somebody comes in and, you know, some rich person comes in and buys them out, you know, the Saad. But basically this weekend, Atlético dos Arcos, big win last week. This week they're playing a club called ADC Coreia, who's in the middle of the pack. Limianos in second place. I'm looking here at the schedule. They're playing a club called Valenciano, which is actually a little bit better than them in the standings, or they're kind of close to each other. So two tough matches for the top two teams. Vitorino de Piões is also a club. They're in third place, but they're only 4 points behind Arcos. And Vitorino de Piões, they've got a home game against the big rival, Punta Barca, the fake town, as I like to call it. And I know some of you are from Punta Barca, and you don't like when I say that, but that's what I say to that other town on the other side of the bridge. And Punta Barca is in eighth place, so they're making a run. And by the way, there's another team from Marcos de Valverde, but I don't follow them. It's a team called Távora, who, to their credit, is in fourth place with 22 points in a tie with Cerveira. Anyway, folks, I'm going to wrap up episode 148. This has been the PortugueseSoccer.com episode talking about the League Cup, talking about the transfer window, and then, of course, these last 20 to 25 minutes I've been talking about the World Cup. Again, PortugueseSoccer.com, Twitter, PSoccerCom, Facebook, PSoccerCom, Instagram, Portuguese_soccer_noticias. You've got this podcast. Thank you for your listens. Always, you don't like what I'm doing, let me know. I know a lot of people didn't like the tweet I put out about Cristiano, the ESPN headline, but while the headline sucked, the story was right. Sorry some of you in California who got angry at me, but I'm sorry the story was right, that Fernando Santos was annoyed. It wasn't fake news. Overall, I think most people, you know, saw the story for what it was, that it was just a really bad headline. But anyway, folks, listen. Let's hope Portugal wins and we go to the semifinals next Wednesday. I've already made arrangements to take off from work next Wednesday, you know, because that's how good, you know, I want to. That Wednesday will not be about my job and everything. It's all about Portugal that day. But in order to do that, we got to win on Saturday against Morocco. So let's see what happens. Anyway, I'm going to wrap up episode 148. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll talk to you next time. Ciao, everybody.